Okay, we are back for episode 289. Joe, how you doing?
I'm just fine, Tim. I mean, last week I actually gave a little prepared presentation, which I was given poor grades for by the internet. But in any case, this week we have a collapse in the banking system and Trump's arrest as looming. So, you know, the world seems to be...
Well, that's something to do with Stormy Daniels or something.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if you have you followed the details of what that's all about, how that works.
I just remember he had paid her to keep quiet.
Yeah.
Non-disclosure agreement. She broke it. And what was it about non-disclosure? She didn't understand. And then her lawyer ended up going to jail, right? Eventually.
Yeah.
What's the New York DA or the U.S. Attorney? Is it DA, I guess?
The indictment would be that Trump gave the money to his attorney to quiet Stormy and thereby violated the election laws because he was somehow bribing an individual to, you know, keep information from the public.
Well, that's not inherently public.
I know. I mean, it's like the weakest thing imaginable.
They never write to that. Boy, they're stretching. We'll talk about how the feds are stretching and what they've done to.
And also, I mean, again, I think the statutes of limitation, where are they in something like this? I mean, this is an event that occurred like in 2016.
Okay, that's 7 years ago. Yeah.
Yeah. And there was the DA, the New York DA took a crack at it. Like 3 years ago, I think, and couldn't come up with any reason to charge him. And now this guy is trying to charge him. But I think, you know, it's a tempest in a teacup.
Is this the same guy who won't throw like muggers and murderers in jail?
Yeah, same guy.
Same guy.
he's plotting, you know, and you know, he just don't know what to make of these guys. I mean, is this just a political grandstand, or is he just so frothy with zealotry that he actually thinks he has something real here? I don't know. Some of the more amusing or interesting kind of phenomena that spun out of this is the Patriot Moat. Have you heard about that?
No, what's that?
This would be a collection of Trumpites, the MAGA group, that would surround Mar-a-Lago with a human...
So he's calling them out to get arrested again for insurrection?
Right. I mean, I think this is like supposed to be a spontaneous kind of, well, I don't know. But anyway, that would really be, you know, a real spectacle for democracy, the Patriot Moat around Mar-a-Lago.
And all this because Trump apparently paid some woman to keep her mouth shut.
Right.
She should do anyway, I suppose. That's professional courtesy.
Yeah.
But you're considering what her job was, right?
Yeah. I still think this smacks to me of theatrics, and I was wrong. I made a prediction that when this first came up, we talked about it, and I said, you know, I'm betting that there's a tape and that we're going to get to see the Donald in action at some point here. It's a prurient idea, but this would be the logic of our culture at the moment. And I when this came up, I wondered, I wonder if there is actually going to be some video evidence here about this. It's not necessary because everything is pretty much out in the open in terms of the, you know, of the fact that she was his mistress. I don't think this is an issue. It's just
the idea. Did they have a relationship where she, I mean, I assume he doesn't have to pay for it. I mean, in a way, he does, but in a way, you always do. But I'm saying
from the glossies that I've seen of her, she doesn't seem like the kind that would have like a cookies and you know, donut relationship with someone. She's more a lady of the night kind of thing, you know. So I don't know about relationship, but
so what's your motivation other than this attention and trying to shake him down for more cash? Why is she running her mouth?
I don't know. I mean, the whole thing is just. You know, this is just an upset.
Well, how many times has Donald Trump been married?
I don't know, like three.
Okay,
three
so each times? Time we know he's gotten married because he's gotten divorced because he's moved on to younger picking. So no, is anyone shocked by this?
I don't. You know, the interesting thing is that he always gets a woman of the same age who looks kind of like the prior to before they went through the process of like. 25 to 40, you know, whatever it is.
And yeah, basically, it's usually a woman who's like well over 30.
Yeah.
But young, still youthful looking. Yeah.
Still youthful looking. There's a certain age and kind of, I don't know. I mean, the pictures of Trump are not wholesome. It's surprising that he's become kind of the figurehead of MAGA. It's a shame there isn't someone more traditional in you know, their relationship with women and with money and with culture. I mean, Trump, you know, his kind of brash, as you know, my position on him, he was selected because of the fact that he can create hate in the left to a greater degree than anyone else on the planet.
Yeah, like you're almost irrational
in the way he treats things up. So he was just there to, you know, create a dialectic in an election cycle to give the impression that democracy was real because, you know, there was so much writing on the results of the election and the optics were so vivid. You know, the left was for, you know, Hillary and the right was for Trump or Biden. But the fact is that, you know, you're going to get Operation Warp Speed. The Federal Reserve was going to continue to steal money and wealth from the American people, and you're going to get all the wars. So the window dressing is different and the optics are very different. But I mean, this, the characters that they give us, I think, are selected just for their, you know, their psychological impact on the electorate, which is to say they can generate emotion.
Yeah, and this, again, you know, this DA up there trying to get attention. Of course, he's as the city falls apart, Donald Trump isn't the one shoplifting and ransacking Chinese restaurants or raping or mugging on raping women and vegetables or you know orchestrating street crime. It's so just more of a distraction. Everyone knows that Donald Trump, you know, is a libertine in that, in those areas. And you know, being sexually liberated, he's very much a man who, at least at one time, was a slave to his passions. I imagine he probably slowed down in his old age, where he gets to settle down and, become more contemplative in your old age. You know, he's the man is approaching 80, but yeah, it is a huge distraction. We've had, as you mentioned, the series of bank crises or failures. We've had crashes at Silicon Valley Bank, at another one called Silvergate and Signature Bank. And then apparently the contagion has spread. I don't know if it's exactly related to, but also the Credit Suisse, today, I think it was announced, it was purchased by United UBS Bank. Was that United Bank of Scotland?
No.
What is it? UBS. I know there is a UBS. Which bank is that? I just saw the headline.
The largest bank in Switzerland, UBS.
So it's Switzerland. I figured it'd be Switzerland. Okay, I know UBS also goes to United. I say, what? Scotland? They bought it out, whatever. They bought like $3.2 billion. But anyway, all these banks, insolvencies that are occurring, apparently, some economists say it's actually much more serious than the 2008-2009 crash that we experienced. That problem, of course, was based on crooked banks making bad mortgage loans. Debtors were unable to, unable to pay. They were defaulting, and it turned out the real estate that they had pledged as collateral was also way overvalued. This was the so called the mark to fantasy, junk mortgages made by false valuations of the property, the actual market price, and the borrower's income. Of course, this was like no doc loans or something. It's all part of democratizing or home ownership or something, spreading the American dream. Of course, then the banks then sold these loans to institutional buyers, pension funds, German savings banks, and other people gullible enough to buy it. And this is all based on, I guess, ultimately in faith in Alan Greenspan. The bubble will continue. What's unique about Silicon Valley Bank was they had no such risk, default risk, because they had a huge amount in a portfolio of treasuries, which can always pay simply by the Fed printing money, of course. And so these prime long-term mortgages whose Silicon Valley Bank bought were also solvent. So that's not a problem. The problem is apparently the financial system itself. That's a much broader issue, actually. It's basically the system has been painted in the corner by the banking system, by the Fed. The Fed can't escape the 13 years of quantitative easing without reversing the asset price inflation. Basically, you can't make war on inflation with interest rate increases they've done since September without also popping the bubble, because a function of that inflation is also asset price inflation. Stocks, well, real estate, and so
what happens here is that the banks have to swallow the long bond. I mean, yes. This is really the problem, is that all of the banks, every, and even the huge banks like Schwab and JP Morgan, the Fed, when it creates all this crazy debt, mm-hmm. requires that the banks eat it. Now, the banks have no trouble with this because they get to invent the money, you know, by borrowing at the discount window at like 0.5%, mm-hmm. and the long bond is at like 2%. So there's your financial genius, right? I mean, there they are, just killing it. They don't do anything. And this was what like Silicon Valley Bank was doing. It had all these long bonds and it was arbitraging them. And it was doing things like it gave $75 million, a true number, to like Black Lives Matter, mm-hmm. Transgender Awareness Day. I mean, it was just the most woke consciousness entity imaginable. And then enormous bonuses to all of the financial geniuses that were, operating the bank. It took in very few deposits relative to the size of the bank. The size of the bank was really just its long bond, which was created out of thin air, just because it had access to the discount window, and they wanted them. The Federal Reserve was, and the U.S. government were creating all these treasuries, and so these guys were just buying them and then living on the arbitrage. But Silicon Valley Bank and all of the banks, really surprisingly, they don't really hedge these things very well. So if the interest rates on the long bond that are currently being issued are greater, then you have huge leverage against the existing bond, the long bond especially, because mm-hmm. it's a long-term structure financial asset. And so you can lose like 10% of the par value with just like a 1.5% interest move. So the interest rates have gone up, 4% against them. And so these guys are all sitting on like losses, which are just cannot possibly be dealt with. The way they deal with it in the fantasy world is they have this financial term where the banks are able to not, they're not forced to sell them. They can just keep them until maturity for 30 years. And it doesn't really matter that the interest rate is 10 times what it was. No one is going to cause them any trouble or force them to sell the bond. Now, that all works great unless the depositors want their money back.
Yeah, so there's a run.
Here's where you get into trouble, because even though the long bond is far more in size than the deposits, Silicon Valley Bank literally was, just in like 2 hours lost all of its actual liquid cash and then had to start selling the bonds. And as soon as it did, it was realizing losses that were far greater than the net value supposedly of the bank. And just to digress, even large companies are in this exact same situation, like Charles Schwab. Mm-hmm. The book debt right now of its long bond is greater than the net worth of the company. Same for JP Morgan. All of them are that way. Now, there is some kind of weird protection that the huge entities have, in that if you have a run on Silicon Valley Bank, it actually is good for the big banks, because remember, this is all just electronic pixelated fairy dust money, right? You don't show up with a wheelbarrow and say, give me $10 million, mm-hmm. in 20. So it's all electronic. So when they go out of Silicon Valley, they have to do something with it. And typically they just deposit it into the larger banks.
So JP Morgan is collecting deposits.
Exactly. So actually the large banks, even though they are absolutely rotten to the core in terms of their actual net worth, they're having more, that all the people are moving out of the smaller banks, which is really a bad thing, because the smaller banks are, one hope we have against the bigger banks.
The community banks aren't going to get any help. Yeah.
No, not a chance. So anyway, so that's really, what happened there. Now, this evening, the Federal Reserve said it was going to create a dollar swap. And this is the first step in the inevitable process that will lead to more quantitative easing and the Federal Reserve buying more long bonds. The dollar swap, you know, it's just, that's just a way to, if one country's currency is being overwhelmed, they can get out of that currency. It creates liquidity between nations. But it's inevitable once you've done that, that then the Fed will also now have to, you know, there'll be a particularly weak country and then they'll have to step in like they did like in Greece and, you know, in the 08 crisis to like backstop everything because the banking system is completely wired together. And that's why, you know, they if you looked at the Fed telling Silicon Valley Bank, we will backstop every single, you know, deposit in the entire thing. We're not going to let a single creditor, depositor lose money. Because if they do, then you start having the credit default swap universe activated. And then, you know, the banks won't lend to one another and the whole system just falls apart because it's a heaping steaming mess of. And so, I mean, this is pretty boring, but this is our condition is just that we've created these assets, you know, the FDIC insurance, it's covering $30 trillion worth of supposed deposits. And it has less than like $500 million.
Yeah, yeah.
If this started to unravel, the thing would just, you know, would just go to zero almost immediately. And so, you know, the as long as people believe the dollar is real, the system will work. They can have infinite creation of money. And as long as you believe it's worth something, you know, it's just this threat that at some point, you know, you start having the doubt. And so they'll work very hard over the next couple of months to slow the doubt down. I'm sorry to be so long-winded, but I just wanted to say what's interesting to me is the meeting this week between Xi Jinping, I can't say the guy's name, the Chinese premier, and Putin. Mm-hmm. They're having a meeting and they haven't actually gotten together since Xi had been elected. He was kind of COVID phobic, so he's been staying around the palace, you know, but he's out now and he's visiting Putin this week. And I'm telling you, Tim, if the two of them came out like on Wednesday, particularly if you have a few more banks, I think you'll get one or two more banks at least, you know, will start to, you know, now that you've started having this doubt that there'll be runs on banks and people wanting their money out and the banks are rotten, there's nothing there. They have to sell their bonds. They're marking now not to fantasy, but to real market value. And that, of course, wipes out the banks. So you get a few of these things making people frightened. And then if you have Putin and Xi come out and say, you know, the whole Western financial system is rotten. And we don't want to be part of it anymore. And we're just going to trade our widgets and our gold and our resources in our currency from now on. That's it. And we will back our currency. If they did it, like we're going to back with gold or something, you know, some commodities, anything. I mean, that would really be something. So this is a very interesting week coming up.
Well, I think who's going to listen to Putin? He's wanted by the International Criminal Court. So
he's sharing a jail cell with Trump.
I think he's guilty of evacuating Russians or something.
Orphans, yeah.
So, but it's interesting. It appears that SVB could have avoided a run by simply paying their depositors more favorable interest rates on their deposits. These banks got greedy. They were paying, they weren't paying depositors anything while they were pocketing the profit from the carry trade from the zero. You know,
it's an absolute cesspool. I mean, yeah. It is an absolute cesspool. I mean, they were giving. I mean, well, first of all, they just treat the depositors like crap, you say. And then they arbitrage with invented money, mm-hmm. right? Against the long bond, and then they live on the arbitrage. So they borrow the money at 0.5%, 1%. They buy the long bond at 2.5%, whatever it is, 1.5%, and that's their financial genius. But then they don't even run the institution with any kind of diligence. They're giving $75 million to BLM and Transgender Awareness Week, and they're just a slush fund for the Democratic Party in California.
Yes.
And then the bonuses that they take, I mean, literally, it's a gangster kind of operation with a transgender face on it, you know? I mean, it's just gangsterism. And the public just puts up with it. I mean, we're just used to it, but, you know, there it is, man. I mean, it's this, and that's why if you start seeing these little banks, I mean, Silicon Valley Bank is probably one of the very worst, but there are hundreds of them throughout the inner cities, particularly in the United States. I mean, if this thing gets rolling, I don't expect that to happen, though. I think that they'll step in with a lot of invented money, backstop everything, bail everyone out, and they just hope that the public calms down.
Yeah, then they're going to continue like capitalizing these startup companies, which don't produce anything of real value, other than maybe another like TikTok app or something. But there's no, they don't manufacture anything. It's contributing also to the further deindustrialization hollowing out of the U.S. economy, because the economy is overly financialized. Of course, again, they're kicking a lot back to the politicians, which is why they're getting this bailout. You know, I think the deposit limit's $250,000, going, making all the deposits whole, which it was just a huge, subsidy or bailout to multi-million-dollar investors in these companies, you know, with like nine-figure accounts, you know, and you know, you think they would have diversified a little bit, and everyone knew interest rates were going up and what that effect would have on bonds, the value of the bond, and apparently no one was doing any risk management there over the past 6-7 months. And so lo and behold, yeah, they were underwater when the market conditions changed intentionally by the Fed, which was trying to tame inflation. And of course, everyone knows when you do that, you have a problem with bond prices, that they drop. So if you go long on bonds and you don't maneuver out of them, you're gonna be confronted with this. It's a little weird that, again, it wouldn't be noticed. Again, it isn't something like the housing crisis back in 2008, 2009. Another crisis created by the Fed with low interest rates. Well,
and everything has been bailed down. I really wonder if like Silicon Valley Bank basically had like a time stamp to it. In other words, I wonder if the people who set it up actually envisioned this exact moment. And just,
I don't think it can be that. I mean, obviously, a lot of the woke stuff is interesting because it's funny,
but
easy to understand. But these things are, I think, are much more complicated.
Well, they certainly knew that eventually there would be some rise in the interest rates, and these long bonds, which they were living on, and stay underwater. So where was the diligence, or at least, just trying to take care of the corporation? That none of it was there. They had, I mentioned the risk management officer was this transgender proponent. I mean, I described her last week. You know, she ticks all the boxes, but clearly not a person, you know, a serious kind of risk management individual for an entity that had billions of dollars of risk. So, you know, you look at that and you go, this just doesn't smell good. It looks bad. It looks to me like they set the thing up as a gangster operation, that they, you know, were going to take advantage of the low interest rates and the arbitrage. And then when things, you know, blew up, they were just going to walk away.
You can have these clowns these woke clowns, at least in the public eyes, take a fall, because now we're all, you know, laughing at. You have that. I sent you that. Who's that character of Credit Suisse?
Ponzi or whatever his name is.
Yeah, he identifies day to day. He goes back and forth and dresses up in a dress, and apparently, and he was given an award or something for women.
I've seen his name, and it's like Pips Buncey or something.
Yeah, Pip Buncey, Pippa and Pippa, and I think his real name.
Yeah, he changes his name all the time. He's fluid.
He was the head of a global management or global investment or something for Credit Suisse, and it's going belly up.
I I think, you know, as like I would create as an investment concept, just go around and look at banks that have transgender individuals as their risk management officers and just short the bank, you know, because it doesn't look like these guys were selected for financial acumen, does it?
Well, whatever economic system you have, whatever banking system you have, if you don't have people of sound judgment and good character running it, you're going to run into trouble. No matter what rules you have, or what monetary system you have. I know there's moral hazard built into bailouts, but there's definitely moral hazard to having degenerates and weirdos, people who are absolutely insane, run your banking, your financial system. They're going to run it to the ground. And especially people who identify primarily as, you know, non-binary or you know, these things. These people are not psychologically well individuals. And so, again, you're speaking, you're creating a financial system which is simply cannot be trusted. I mean, there is a reason why an investment house or a fund would be called Fidelity Trust. The word Fidelity, why do they use that word Fidelity, right? Because you're true to something. But how can you be true to something when the person who's running that bank is denying reality? Like, I'm a woman today, or I'm claiming to be a woman. You know, and then this guy gives an interview, Pippa or Pip Bunstay, interview when he's obviously a man dressed up with makeup and a dress, and he's saying, you know, I'm a genuine person. I'm true to my genuine self, and you're pretending to be something that isn't. So you can extrapolate from that the whole financial system is based on fraud and deceit and unreality, which it is.
Yeah, I think this is, I mean, to me, I really sense just hard edge gangsterism. I think that, you know, in back of the transgender face, there is like legitimate smart gangsters that are just.
Well, that's interesting because it was like Tucker Carlson kind of alluded to that when he was talking about the banking crisis. He's going off on the woke stuff and he's addressing the character issues. And the weirdos running the bank. And of course, that's an easy target. But he talked about how back in 2008, 2009, you had something called Occupy Wall Street, and there are legitimate protests. These are like students are heavily in debt, couldn't get a job. This is part of the aftermath of the housing crash and these things, the crisis and all the bailouts. And they were actually going to Jamie Dimon's office and calling his name out and saying, hey, you know, yeah, calling out all the bailouts. And it was that point that all big corporations and banks said, hey, guess what? You're all gay or you're all black. And sort of promoting all this identity, all the woke stuff. So all the woke stuff is pretty much is a promotion of what E. Michael Jones calls the gay disco, to get involved in this weird, perverse identity politics and these things, and get people ignore the economic issues and start indulging in these sort of this sexual identity, this weird.
Yeah. I want to engage in just a brief, you know, moment of pop psychology. I mean, my opinion about the transgender risk management officers, mm-hmm, is that it's a very poor fit. And I'm going to go, I know I'll face criticism, but I'm prepared to, because this is what I think is a category of reality. And I'm just wanting to describe it. I think that you don't want these people to be risk management officers, because for one thing, they probably don't have a lot of training, but I do think that, like Pips Bunsey may have, but here's my problem with it, is that I have had experience with a few people like this. They're very rare, but I have had experience, and I've also seen now, of course, they're very common on the media, so you get to experience them in that sense. And they are so, their personalities are so self-centered. And also so just obsessive about their sexuality.
So the narcissists.
There doesn't seem to be any mental energy left over for normal analysis of things like, you know, bond rates and things. You know what I mean? And so what I'm just saying is that they just don't seem kind of psychologically designed for the kind of meticulous, objective, long hours sort of, you know, effort. They seem to be ready for a party. Mm-hmm. And they certainly seem to be ready to like criticize culture or anyone, you know, and to talk about themselves and their journey and things. But I mean, you just don't see them as, you know, kind of sober gangster-like individuals like the typical banker. So this is my thought, is that it's obviously unreal to have these people in these locations. Like, I thought that Sam Bankman-Fried of FTX, I thought he was, you know, and they talked about the sexual degeneracy he was involved with. And I think I smell a rat here, Tim. I mean, I look at, you know, the Bips Ponzi and the woman who was the risk manager for Silicon Valley Bank, you know, the transgender kind of proponents. I just think this could all be fake. I think that they could be giving us these characters as distractions, and, you know, because basically they think that, well, you know, the middle class will dislike these individuals, and so it'll be easy for them to see them in a bad light. But I just wonder what isn't, I don't think that these people are smart enough to really run this caper as they have. I think there's evil and like smart people in back, and we're just putting this stuff out there for the public as a way of kind of covering up the fact that these are just literally hardcore gangster operations, which are just designed to suck in as much money as they can, knowing full well that they're going to blow up. And when they do, they're going to have the happy transgender face to either defend themselves or to distract, you know, from public scrutiny.
Yeah, there was, I read this report over the week that the actually the hidden grammar or the true story behind the SVB's collapse is drugs. And now the story reads sort of a little QAnon-y, if you will, because it talks about the feds going after the bank. Apparently there was like in over 40 hours, there were like $42 billion withdrawal, which is simply not normal. And they think this has something to do with the civil war in Mexico between the drug cartels, and which cartels has the favor of the U.S. government, particularly DEA and the FBI. And apparently some have speculated Mexican drug cartels, this is all part of them trying, of people connected to the drug trade, hiding the laundered money and moving it to other institutions. Those familiar with, you know, somewhat familiar with the war on drugs and the role that illegal, you know, narcotic funding plays in capitalizing banks and Wall Street wouldn't be too surprised by this. But they say that SVB was actually a victim of the struggle going on in Mexico between the various cartels, and which cartel, what's, you know, Sinaloa or the Jalisco cartel, is now gaining the favor of the U.S. government. Because the U.S. government manages these cartels, and also the money that flows into the U.S. banking system capitalizes the U.S. banking system, and the withdrawal itself is a part of this struggle that's going on. Of course, it isn't being reported on. It's being reported on as sort of a, and it's, again, it doesn't necessarily mean that the plunge in bond prices didn't have an effect, but this is another side of the story. This sort of explained the sudden withdrawal, which created the, because like you mentioned as well, the withdrawal of funds, if there isn't a run on the deposits, isn't a problem, even if the bond prices, folks, they can keep it on their books. It becomes a problem.
That makes sense to me. And that, yeah. I think that the cartels may have been working with the creators of the bank from the very beginning.
And all those startups are excellent laundering operations.
Exactly.
Like casinos.
That, you know, you look at the that kind of lightweight character, Sam Bankman-Fried.
Yes.
You know, he had all these billions of dollars with FTX. And I mean, he just doesn't come across as someone who had the wherewithal to.
The whole outfit was like all these ne'er-do-wells. Who impressed with billions of dollars?
Yeah. But, you know, there were some more professional gangster types in back of them. And I wouldn't be surprised if, like, almost all of the new startup banks that we're seeing in the US are just, you know, have similar kind of profiles. Is that so, you know, it
looks, well, you talk about nearly $1 trillion of drug proceeds from narcotics trafficking being spent somewhere. And so, I mean, being put somewhere, being parked somewhere. So these institutions could be, again, the fact that they collapse could be a victim of that. And what's not too surprising, there was the United Nations Office of Drug and Crime reported years ago that the money laundering the huge amount of cash that's churned up by illegal drug trade has become a vital source of liquidity for the financial system, for the banks. There was Antonio Maria Costa told the British newspaper The Observer in late 2009 that the proceeds from the illegal drug trade were the only liquid investment capital available to many banks on the brink of collapse. In fact, a majority of the $352 billion of drug profits was absorbed into the economic system as a result. So, you know, whether it's fentanyl, heroin, drugs, marijuana, these drugs, you know, that are kind of rotting out the country are being reinvested into the economic system. It's building strip malls, or it's capitalizing Wall Street, keeping bond, even treasury bonds. It's propping up bond prices. What's interesting about that is I remember years ago, I read a book by Peter Bruton, The Mafia, CIA, and George Bush. In the book, he explained how George Bush, Lloyd Bentsen, the senator from Texas and vice president candidate for Michael Dukakis, were members of a small circle of powerful Texas businessmen linked with the mafia and also CIA. In the book, he details how money scammed from the savings and loan, which collapsed, went to fund covert CIA operations, including Iran-Contra, and also secret weapons deals, and also mafia, illegal mafia operations, organized crime. So these savings and loans were being raided to pay for these operations. They just collapsed. And the Bushes and these savings loans are all tied into all these characters like Ed Wilson, Carl Jenkins, Ted Shackley, that's the name, the blonde ghost. Chichi Quintera, CIA case officer, and all these, Tom Kleins, all these names date back as far back as the Kennedy assassination. It's a fascinating book. You didn't hear anything about it. It came out early 1990s, but it spells out. It put a certain it provided a certain insight into the savings and loan crisis of the 1980s and 1990s. This was a failure of like 745 savings loan associations and thrifts that failed. It ended up resulting in like a $500 billion bailout that was huge at the time. They say it created the economic recession, which ultimately led to George Bush's defeat in 1992 to Bill Clinton. But it's interesting how sort of these savings and loan institutions are collapsing, and you could blame it on the concomitant slowdown of the financial industry and also the real estate bubble that had popped. But nevertheless, behind that, you had these banks that are simply being robbed blind by organized crime and elements of the CIA to fund these operations. And so, again, it's another good example how, again, we see this collapse, but there's a whole nother story to this. So that when I read that report, that SVB collapsing as a result of a rapid withdrawal of funds because of a fight between the two cartels in Mexico and the federal government, there's a whole story that isn't being covered here, you know?
Yeah, for sure. But the one thing that's going to be completely clear, there's so much confusion. You know, the banking system is complex and criminal and secret, you know, and we can't audit, of course. So it is just a malevolent lump. But the sad thing here is that this is going to have just really sad negative effects for all of the public, because you're going to see, you know, groceries are going to be a lot more expensive.
Yes.
You know, the effects of inflation are really destructive, particularly on the lower classes, and they are going to be hard felt over the next few years, because they're the ones who are, you know, as the morphing of the financial system right now that's going to take place. They're going to start buying the bonds. You know, the Federal Reserve are going to have to come in, buy the bonds, and invent more money and buy more bonds. So this will, of course, erode rapidly the value of the dollar. Payroll will not keep abreast of the rate of inflation, and so people get poorer. And that's really what you're going to see. This is the effect of all of this, you know, kind of three-handed money stuff with the Federal Reserve and all the banking system.
Ironically, the deposits at SVB exploded in the past few years. It went from like $18 billion to $50 billion within a couple of years, largely as a result of the COVID lockdowns and how the tech industry made so much money, right? Because of people were forced to stay at home. And they went online, and there's an explosion in online activity and transactions and these things. And so they made a bunch of money. Then all of a sudden it seems like it was withdrawn. So it does seem like a pump and dump operation going on here. And then the cover is, of course, the bond issue that the Fed, the bond crisis that the Fed created, trying to tame the inflation that the Fed created to deal with the COVID lockdowns. So when they're trying to paper over the economic lockdown, one thing that's overlooked is one thing that maybe is causing the problems in the banking and financial sector is the actual physical damage done to the U.S. economy in the past couple of years, the lockdowns, all the businesses, payrolls that no longer exist, people aren't working. And all this, you know, you're talking about a decimation of small business and restaurants. So all that velocity, all that money, you know, going through wasn't happening. And they just tried to paper it over. We're seeing it now with higher price inflation. Then you have the realities of like the cost of the artificial shortages on energy caused by the Biden administration when it picked a fight with Russia over Ukraine. And the question is, you know, will the financial crisis help bring peace to Ukraine? Probably not, because they'll just create more billions to send. As Janet Yellen was over there.
I think that what they're going to run out of is just bodies. I mean, I'm getting, you know, my sources, and you know, remember, I'm not there, so I just have the, you know, internet people contact me, and they, you know, they seem reasonable. But what I'm hearing is that the body count in Ukraine is far worse even than the worst cases that kind of being circulated in independent media, hundreds of thousands of dead. And so you're just they're incarcerating everyone that they can, even young kids, women, the sick. They're just throwing them into the battle at this point, and they're just being mowed down. There is no real purpose for the Ukrainian military activity at this point, except population reduction. You know, I talked about this, made my conjecture concerning it, you know, a year ago, and it looks like it is coming to pass. But I think that, you know, with the financial crisis that will certainly seize up a lot of the governments for at least a few months, you know, NATO has shot its bolt. Mm-hmm. They built the Ukrainian army, you know, and in the same way that I think the German army was built up prior to World War II, just to destroy the nation. Now it's served its function. The Ukraine is an absolute wasteland. It's a wasteland. You know, half the people have left. You're going to have millions of casualties. The economy shot. The Eastern side, I think, can recover because they'll be part of Russia, but the Western side is gone. It'll be a rump state and then basically just be owned by BlackRock after a few months. So that's all just coming to an end. I think you're going to see the Ukrainian war will, having served its purpose, will just stop talking about it in the same way we stopped talking about long COVID. Mm-hmm. It's vivid and real, but then it isn't, and then everyone forgets. And
well, so that's here's a good example of harming the economy. Blowing up a key part of the world's energy infrastructure, like Nord Stream pipelines, will have a real effect on the economy. It will cause shortages. It will cause scarcity, sure, and poverty. So this might somehow work its way into a banking crisis. You know, that's one way it may express itself, other than
and people. It's all part of the establishment of the new feudal system.
Well, you know, yeah, central bank digital currencies, right?
Right, because we just the public just gets poorer and poorer every year. We our currency is being debased, and of course, we're just getting physically poorer. You know, and so
well, good example is we have a drone get shot down over the Black Sea. When we don't have drones patrolling our southern border.
Yeah, how about that? Isn't that funny? It's
like, they don't bother with drones.
And remember, the people who are coming in are all financially negative on the country, certainly for the first generation.
Yes.
So you're looking at the United States having, you know, this drain on it, financial drain, resource drain over the next 20 years as they accommodate the wave, human assault from the South. I mean, this country, we are literally, moving into the third world here pretty quick.
Well, they're inviting it in. They're the entire third world in, right, by the millions.
Exactly, yeah.
That's our thing. And again, it's obviously the Biden administration is organizing, engineering it. But I saw a article in Idaho, Republicans are calling for more visas for cheap labor to come in to Idaho. From, you know, so they want to have more guest workers, whatever, visa guest workers. So, because there's apparently a labor shortage. So instead of paying Native Americans higher wages, they want to bring in more, I guess, helots to come in and work for cheap. And this, again, just to save, so you don't have to spend as much money getting your lawn mowed or something, or your food picked, to make the jobs, you know, wages high enough to attract domestic labor. You know, you have, again, business interests, Republicans, you know, supposedly they're the one critical of the Biden administration and its border policy, calling for more, you know, millions of more foreigners to team into the country, you know, just so they can make more money, show more, again, maybe show more profit on their quarterly reports without any thought.
And they're keeping these other, the nations that the immigration is originating from, they're keeping them poor and just disorganized. You know, the U.S. has its a U.S. aid package in all of those countries.
NGOs. There's
right. So they then the, you know, the idea of coming north to try to find
World a bank living. And all that. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they're on their way, and the border is wide open at this point. So
well, that was way back in '74 when Henry Kissinger, you know, wrote that study memorandum and you know 200 calling for the deindustrialization, and the impoverishment of the third world through the through the creation of higher energy prices. Then you could crush these countries with debt. Wait, now it seems being applied, you know, to the West.
It worked out great, didn't it?
So I mean,
yeah, that's why the you know the Putin Sheen meeting is so interesting, because you know, Putin's speech that he gave a few weeks ago was, you know, and of course you cannot trust this individual, but there is interesting theatrics going on, and his speech was so clear-minded. You know, he talked about the degenerate NATO countries and pedophilia was running mm-hmm. amok, and you know their financial system is fake. I think that that really there is a growing appetite to articulate some resistance against, you know, the oligarchs that run the NATO countries, and you know, the U.S. situation with like the open border, you know, our situation and our backing of the Ukrainian war, which is going to completely blow up in our face, and people wondering what the sanctions. I mean, there's really going to be appetite for severe change. I have no idea if we can organize it, but you know, we've talked for a long time about potentially the unvaxxed being a political force. This still is a hope for me that there would be some way to organize this group, particularly internationally, because man, oh man, I mean, the evil that controls us has never been more visible, more easy to see. And it's, you know, I think perhaps there can be a reaction against it.
Yes. Again, I've said it, I'll say it again. What happens if when the apocalypse happens and no one notices? Great revealing. Did you, there's an interesting First Amendment case here. The Douglas Mackey in New York City, it's quite striking what the feds are trying to do here. This is probably the most important free speech case in the United States at the moment, and he's on trial right now. He is facing up to 10 years in a federal prison for posting a anti-Hillary Clinton meme back in 2016 on Twitter. At the time, Mr. Mackey, I guess he went by the name Ricky Vaughn, who was a character in a movie, a Charlie Sheen character, Major Leagues, I think. And at the time, it was a pro-Trump Twitter account, and he was apparently very popular, which apparently the feds are claiming, which is why he's vulnerable to being thrown into prison. But anyway, it's consistent sort of with these January 6th prosecutions, and also how they tried to go after Kyle Rittenhouse when he was defending his life, during the craziness of 2020, they tried to throw him in prison. But he was acquitted, of course. Basically in January 2021, not too long after the January 6th, you know, insurrection. And there was like, so this anti, anti-MAGA crackdown. The Justice Department charged Mackey with conspiring to deprive individuals of their constitutional right to vote. Basically illegal memes, basically his memes. He posted this Twitter thing with avoid the line, vote from home. Text Hillary to 59925. It's a picture of a black lady with a sign that reads behind her, African Americans for Hillary, president. So I guess the Justice Department is claiming that black women are too stupid to realize this is a joke. But specifically the DOJ is claiming that that meme merits a prison sentence up to 10 years for a violation of 18 U.S. Code 241. This is known as the Ku Klux Klan Act. The Justice Department's argument is that by posting that meme on Twitter in 2016 and designing it to resemble Hillary Clinton ad, the Mackey deceived the public into casting invalid text messages to vote as a part of a conspiracy to deprive them of the right to vote, even though everyone knows there was no texting by phone. So basically, the federal government cannot actually show that it happened, but it could have happened. It may have happened, but they can't provide any evidence. This is what the government is actually saying, that this meme fooled people into not voting, even though they can't cite a particular incident. That's how outrageous this case is.
It's amazing. Yeah, I mean, first of all, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, they're calling this what's called stochastic terrorism. You make a joke or you do some form of satire, and someone goes out and does something you're responsible for, which is, of course, absurd. That violates any standard of free speech and the Brandenburg standard by the Supreme Court. So they're trying to go after that, but they're claiming this is now the law itself is specific. You have to use threat of violence to prevent someone from voting. And obviously, he didn't do that. At the same time, they're claiming that there is a confidential informant that they're using as a witness that they're not allowing the defense team to cross-examine, which is a violation of the 16th Amendment. The Sixth Amendment. So really, the case should just be dropped. Obviously, this was a joke. The fact that the feds would do this, but again, then after we witnessed what they've done with January 6th and the last week when we talked about Jacob Chansley and the QAnon shaman who they railroaded, I guess at the same time also prevented exculpatory evidence being introduced, which they're obligated to do. I mean, this is just a complete abuse of power. But this is par for the course, though, with the Biden Justice Department.
Yeah, they don't have much tolerance for humor in the woke left, do they?
No.
I mean, you think about that. I mean, they don't laugh very much just as a collection. They're so serious. And here, this is obvious humor. And I would just say, you know, I would cite the principle of habeas corpus. I mean, where is the individual who didn't vote because of this common yes. meme? If you can't produce a single person, then, you know, even if it is a theoretical crime without a body, I would have to say, sorry, you know, particularly given the power of the First Amendment. But I mean, let's face it, the First Amendment is the first principle of freedom that is on the chopping block, right? It is right now where all of the major attacks are going. The January's, you know, six insurrection, so-called, was obviously an attempt to reduce it. There's that assault, the legal kind of humorless restriction of ideas and humor, right? But it's being attacked in another way too, you know, the virality project Matt Taibbi, I think is how you pronounce it. You know, he brought out the information that the technology they were using against people who wanted to talk about the fact that the vaccines were dangerous was so extensive and so coordinated between government and the large businesses and the internet providers that it really is just a complete assault on the First Amendment.
Yeah, there's interesting. Senator Mark Kelly from Arizona.
Yeah.
Said that he's concerned about bank runs being created by people talking about it on social media, and there should be censorship.
So. It's just hilarious. I mean, yeah, the fact that the criminals are operating the bank, that's not a problem. But if someone, you know, starts calling them on it, you know, that's where we have to. Yeah. So, you know, it's the world for Americans is so much different, isn't it, than people thought it was, like, you know, 10 years ago. And the normie still thinks it is. The normie still believes that the country is a rule of laws and has a history of promotion of democracy and things like this. But it's really just a gangster state at this point. And the politicians are just there to create sophistry and confusion so that people don't understand they're being stolen from and basically genocided. You know, I mean, that's just an outrageous position, given that he doesn't mention the criminality of the bankers who are, robbing the public blind, mm-hmm. You know?
Yep. And you have, also with the Douglas Mackey case, you have a situation where there was a character witness or something, a guy who had written a book. He was going to testify on behalf of Mackey, and apparently SPLC called him up and threatened him. So that's witness intimidation, legal, of course. Then you also with this Proud Boys case, the FBI was caught with emails showing that they were actually destroying exculpatory evidence to frame the defendants, and the judge laughed it off. Yeah. And so now we talked about last week how the judges are permanently responsible for, you know, for this atrocious treatment of these defendants, January 6th, because they allowed these prosecutors just to drag this out to break them. Judges are supposed to prevent that from happening. Just shows the judges are simply members of the regime, and there's no independent thought here.
Just gangsterism. It's a dangerous world, and really, if you think about, well, what is protecting the public against, you know, the FBI, the Praetorian Guard, you know, of the woke left at this point? It's really only the independent media. That's it. I mean, you can't, obviously, the New York Times, etc., that tranche of media is aligned with the oligarchs. So the only thing that the public has is the information that can create a political reaction that the oligarchs would prefer not to occur. And so that will change their behavior. You know, that's it. So it's really incumbent on all of us to, you know, to expand our connectivity. You know, we need to make sure that whenever these episodes occur, which are just illegal operations, you know, by the government, so-called government, against the public, you know, that there is someone there to mention this to the public at large, mm-hmm. right? To create a reaction against it, to start, you know, and also to organize our media, because if you look at the Virality Project, you can see they have so much technology to control the internet. You know, you have to find ways, you know, for example, like things like the Irish Light, you know, where you just go straight to newspapers, you know, particularly in communities that are have some connection, you know, inside of itself, you can do things like this. But all of these things need to be tried, because the world is just, there's just so much criminality and violence now against the public that's not in any, or very little restrictions against, that we really have to start kind of creating a kind of vigilante media situation where we can protect each other through information exchange that's really quick and alert and, and when there's trials like this, you know, that are just, in my opinion, just kangaroo courts to create intimidation, we really should be trying to make this something the public is aware of, is, you know, the absurd nature. The example this week is the arrest of potential arrest this coming week of Trump. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just setting Trump up as a representative of the white male. That's the role he plays in the theater. And if they arrest him and humiliate him, then we all experience, you know, that diminution of psychological strength. You know, this is just part of the authoritarian personality project, you know, where Europeans are just maneuvered into sex, drugs, rock and roll, and impotence, you know. So, you know, I don't think I'll be in the Patriot moat surrounding Mar-a-Lago, but I do understand, you know, the emotions that would might get people to feel that way, you know.
They're same with the January 6th protesters, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, no, I thought
that, you know, why they did it. Why they did it.
Yeah, they had such perfect grounds for protest. My God, it was just, you'd never find a, you know, something that was as challenging to the, you know, the consciousness of patriots than that absurd elections. But it was also clear, and you and I, we talked about it for weeks before, you know, that this looked like a setup, you know, that it looks like it was all.
Well, evidently that's what, enough so they could spin the narrative of being, they could stir up trouble and create, at least in some areas, you know, some violence, some confrontation.
I think a lot of people thought that they were actually going to overturn the election. I think that they until the last minute, they thought that Pence was going to refuse to certify and there would be, you know.
Is a procedure for that. That's why it's certified. The fact that you have a certification process implies that they may not be certified.
Well, but Tim, Trump was legally required he shouldn't even have gone to Pence. I mean, he should have shut the thing down. If he actually believed the things that he's telling the public, he's required to actually make sure that the process goes through another, you know, tranche of legalities to verify everything. But instead, you know, it just kind of funneled all down to that one moment.
He didn't pardon any of the January 6th protesters. He chose to pardon Jonathan Pollard and that kosher.
That is so telling. Trump should have pardoned. He could have issued
a blanket pardon like Jimmy Carter did for a draft dodgers.
He should have been the last act.
Yeah.
You know, before he left office, he just should have pardoned all of them. But instead now, you know, they end up, and that's why I'm so suspicious of that whole process as just being a theater of the authoritarian personality, you know, where we end up with less self-esteem and less confidence. And we're sitting there watching these people rot in prison for year after year for doing nothing, you know, and in the course that just intimidates us against any kind of protest or, you know.
Well, that's why you had these cases like the Mark Hawk case where he was acquitted, I think in an hour after a week trial for protesting. He's a pro-life activist and that's there to, again, he's simply a victim of Merrick Garland's, you know, political bias in support of abortion. So Merrick Garland can't be trusted to enforce the law because he thinks abortion is a greater value. So he's going to abuse the law, the judicial system, the Justice Department, the court system to terrorize pro-life activists using this pretext of the FACE Act. And he doesn't care how bad it looks. You know, it looks awful, of course. Some of the Mackey case looks awful. But you have people who don't think that matters because what matters is that they're the enemy. It's the friends enemies distinction that they make. So they're on the other side. They don't hold fashionable beliefs, so they don't have benefit of protection of the laws. They need to be smashed. Like, so Merrick Garland is acting like a Czechist. Yeah, but he's over there and he's over there talking about Nuremberg 2.0 trial, going after Russian war crimes. Well, first of all, to do that, you have to like conquer unconditionally Russia and put everyone in the dock like they did with Germany. But apparently he's talking about war crimes in Europe. I don't know, what does that have to do with the Attorney General? Apparently he named a guy, Eli Rosenbaum, is apparently spearheading that effort.
Yeah.
Just, you know, a coincidence.
I think of, they talk about indicting Putin as though this was a realistic concept, but they forget, Tim, that there would be a little process that would take place before that could actually occur called a nuclear war.
Yes.
So this sort of becomes maybe just it's more of a theatrical idea than something that's realistic. So you wonder why they would even bring this about, you know, that we're going to have and of course it's preposterous. Think about this. You have the Ukrainians just being bled white. And when you take the position that, well, we're going to, you know, go after the leader of the Russian nation for war crimes. How do you think that helps with any kind of potential negotiations that need to take place to extricate the violence from this country? Because that has to happen. They have to, you know, what they really need to do is they need to go to Russia and they go, look, you know, we've shot our bolt. What do we have to do to bring in a cessation of the violence? I mean, this, if this was a sane world, that's what, you know, and there would be things like Russia's territorial acquisitions, you know, there would be, these would be the issues that have to be, would need to be discussed. Well, how is that ever going to happen when you have crackpots, you know, in the West talking about where we have to have a war trials commission, you know, against, against Putin, right? And this was what he did, what he's accused of is moving orphans illegally because they were in an area where there could be shelling.
Well, he should have left them there to get shelled, I guess. Then,
I mean, anyway, the thing is just, you know, it's clown world, except it's actual blood at this point. I mean,
And well, the problem is U.S. foreign policy is being controlled by people who aren't renowned for their sense of limitation.
All they care about is reducing the population of Europeans. I mean, Victoria Nuland was giving, you know, cookies out during the Maidan, you know, riots to encourage the Ukrainians to put in a Russian hating fascist who would certainly provoke the war with Russia. And now they built up this Ukrainian army. You know, I mean, it was an enormous thing a year ago. They had 400,000 active troops, 200,000 reservists. They had like 1,200 tanks. Now they're pulling like 60-year-olds off the street, you know, to put them into the breach. So the army has literally been wiped out. Where is Vicky Nuland's apology to the Ukrainian people? Right.
Well, people who had relatives died in the Holocaust don't apologize. They're apologized too. That's their position.
I guess not. Gee whiz. But anyway, I mean, this is just, you know, and the stories that I'm getting are that there is actually some subterranean anger in the NATO countries, and that this would just be a great time for Putin and Xi to try to, you know, make a maneuver. I mean, notice that China brokered the deal between Iran and Saudi Arabia. I mean, it could be just optics. I don't know. But it certainly had the effect of taking the place of the typical role of the U.S. in world politics, right? Except it's the Chinese doing this. And so, I mean, that is kind of a natural step into what could be something far larger, which would be that, you know, Putin and Xi announce some kind of financial organization, which they're going to encourage, upset, you know, like other nations to join. And you could really have, particularly the few of the NATO countries decided that this was just not in their interest to be a vassal to the U.S. any longer. Boy, imagine that. You could have an absolute new world in like a few months.
Well, are there any more pipelines to bomb?
I mean, that's what we're reduced to. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just so pathetic. You think of in NATO is just being exposed as an absolute paper tiger. It is so pitiful.
How will the Chinese respond to being accused of being anti-Semitic or anti-Semitic?
Well, I think they won't care. I mean, who knows? But I would imagine they would scratch their head over that one.
Did you know Merrick Garland had relatives who died in the Holocaust?
I did.
He's making that point. It's relevant, but he made that point.
I mean, I really would like to. I get, there's a lot of people who think I'm a denier, but I'm really just someone that would like to have a clarification of the details. That's really all I really am here. I'd like to know, I mean, how many were in the camps, how many died, and how many were left over? Because it just seems like there's just so many survivors. They're just everywhere.
Yeah, they're Holocaust question deniers, meaning they deny
the people have legitimate questions.
Yeah,
I mean, I know there was a camps. I mean, that seems clear to me. I certainly wouldn't want to be in any of them. But, you know, it's when you get into the propaganda aspect of it and you can't talk about it because you have this structure of intimidation. I mean, this is not, I just don't think it's going to last that much
longer. Well, if Merrick Garland is able to impanel a war crimes tribunal for the Russian-Ukraine war, would they rely on torture testimony where like 75% of the people running, would they be Jewish? And
yeah.
So I wonder if it would be the same procedures they used in the first one.
Well, you know, but the poor Ukrainians, I mean, you think of the Holodomor, mm-hmm. and you think of the Bolsheviks and the Jews who were involved with that organization and the specific people, Yagoda and Kaganovich, the two guys who ran the Holodomor. Well,
yeah, Kaganovich, which is short, you know, the shortened version of the name is Kagan.
Yeah, that's right.
Victoria Nuland is married to who?
To Kagan, right? That was small world. But now, I mean, Nuland is and Zelensky are really, they're kind of in a way just operating Holodomor 2.0. Mm-hmm. And the Western media is taking the place of the New York Times, which suppressed all the truth about the Holodomor and all of the starving Ukrainians because they're afraid it would give socialism a bad name. And here it's that we don't want people to know that the Ukrainian army has been utterly destroyed and hundreds and thousands of Ukrainians have been killed. And another large tranche have been wounded to the extent that they'll never return to normal life. We don't want to bring that truth out because that might be bad for the war effort. I mean, right? So this is really kind of just a new sort of technologic Holodomor 2.0. And yeah, there could be, you know, war crimes trials, but I'm not sure who should be the one sitting in the docket, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. So, well, at the very least, it's... the war has created a wonderful business opportunity for BlackRock, so which is really okay, Joe.
Tim, well, it's going to be an exciting week, brother. Could be. We'll see what happens.
Take it easy.
You too. Bye-bye.